After Moses had gone down the mountain to the people, he consecrated them, and they washed their clothes. Then he said to them, "Prepare yourselves for the third day. Abstain from sexual relations." On the morning of the third day, there was thunder and lightning, with a thick cloud over the mountain, and a very loud trumpet blast. Everyone in the camp trembled. Then Moses led the people out of the camp to meet with God, and they stood at the foot of the mountain. Mount Sinai was covered with smoke, because the Lord descended on it in fire. The smoke billowed up from it like smoke from a furnace, and the whole mountain trembled violently. As the sound of the trumpet grew louder and louder, Moses spoke, and the voice of God answered him. The Lord descended to the top of Mount Sinai and called Moses to the top of the mountain. So Moses went up, and the Lord said to him, "Go down and warn the people, so they do not force their way through to see the Lord, and many of them perish. Even the priests who approach the Lord must consecrate themselves, or the Lord will break out against them." Moses said to the Lord, "The people cannot come up Mount Sinai because you yourself warned us. Put limits around the mountain and set it apart as holy." The Lord replied, "Go down and bring Aaron up with you. Put the priests and the people. But the priests and the people must not force their way through to come up to the Lord, or he will break out against them."
Thank you very much, Millie, for reading for us. We're thinking about our title this morning, which is Meeting God. What is it like to meet God? We're all going to meet God at the end of our lives, face to face, whether we believe in him, whether we want to or not, we're all going to meet him. And we can meet God before that. We can meet God when we come to know Jesus. And then we can be meeting God every day, whenever we open our Bibles and listen to what he says, or when we sit down or kneel and speak to him in prayer. We meet God. But when we meet God in this life, we don't see him. We don't see him face to face as we will. And so it would be easy to take it lightly and to forget or to not know what is really happening and who it is we're meeting with. The Times newspaper wrote about the kind of God that is presented on a radio broadcast. I don't know if you've ever heard it. It's in the morning, Radio 4, it's called Thought for the Day. And the kind of God that the Times says is presented is like this. He does no smiting. He is never angry, no matter what issues come before him. The God you hear in Thought for the Day has been created by BBC producers in their image. A slightly disappointed but nonetheless benevolent middle-aged man of confused sexuality who wishes that everybody might live together peaceably in a warm and caring multicultural society. It's been said that easygoing people want to believe in an easygoing God. But God is not like us. God is not the way we would make him. He's not the way we would choose him to be. He is holy, as it says there behind me, in the words that have been up at the back since this building was first built. He is holy, 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 Lord God Almighty. He's different. He's other. He's not the same as us. So how then do we know what it is like to meet God? How can we know who we're meeting with? Well, because God has met with people in the past, and he's told us about that in the Bible, in our reading today, in the book of Exodus. And there are two things we need to understand about meeting God. And the first is that meeting God inspires holiness. That's verses 1 to 8. When God saves people, when we come to know him, when we come into relationship with him, we find we are motivated. We find we want to obey him and choose to obey him because of that. So here's what God says to the people of Israel, "You yourselves have seen what I did to Egypt and how I carried you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now, if you obey me fully and keep my covenant, then out of all nations you will be my treasured possession. Although the whole earth is mine, you will be for me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation." God says to Moses, these are the words you are to speak to the Israelites. God reminds them how they first came to meet God. How did they come to have a relationship with God and meet with God? Well, it was all God's doing. Firstly, God saved them. He rescued them from the power of Egypt. They were slaves in Egypt. They couldn't have come to God themselves. So God defeated Egypt and brought Israel to meet God. And bringing them involved a journey, involved traveling through a dangerous and difficult journey to travel to meet God at Mount Sinai. And God says he did that like an eagle carrying her chicks. I don't know if you know much about eagles. They tend to have nests that are really very high up in dangerous mountainous places. And apparently when the eagle chicks are just about ready to take their first flight out of the nest, the mother eagle very sensibly will kind of hover just below as they first come out so as to be able to catch them and help them on their journey, on their first journey. Well, God has brought these people out of slavery and they've begun their journey for the first time and God carries them. We are slaves to sin and God saves us and rescues us and we're vulnerable and fragile and God carries us to himself to meet him. So God didn't only save them from something, from slavery to Egypt, in our case, from slavery to sin. God didn't only save them from something, he saved them for something, to meet God and to live with God and to be in a relationship with God and to live his way. And he unpacks that in those verses. God talks about how they will be his treasured possessions. Because everything that God made is his possession. But those people that he has brought to meet him are a special treasure to him. They are close to his heart. And he values them very highly. Treasured possessions. He wants his people to be a kingdom of priests. In other words, everyone in the whole kingdom, everyone who knows God and has God as their king, has that kind of special relationship with God that you would expect only a priest to have. But God says he wants that for everyone who knows him, that closeness to God. And he wants them to be a holy nation, not to be like everybody else in the world, but to be like God and to live his way. And verse 4 comes before verse 5. So first there we're told that God saved them. Then in the second sentence he says, now if you obey me fully. So first they're saved and then they're told to obey. He says, now that I've saved you, now that I've carried you, you're to obey me fully. And that is still true for Christians today. We're not trying to be good enough for God. We're not trying to obey God so that God will save us from death. God has saved us from death. God has brought us to know him if we're Christians. And that is what makes us able and willing to obey him. That is what makes us want to obey him. Notice in verse 5, the second sentence there, it's not up on the screen, is it? Let me just see. Yes, it is. He says, now if you obey me fully and keep my covenant. Not if you earn my covenant, not if you achieve my covenant, but if you keep my covenant. And he says, my covenant. This is God's covenant. A covenant is a promise, it's a pledge. God is saying, I've made these promises to you. I've rescued you. I've committed myself to you. Now stick with that. Keep going with that. And if you do, you'll continue to be my treasured possession and my kingdom of priests. And they're so moved and so amazed by this, the whole experience of being saved and brought to meet God. And they say this. The people all responded together, we will do everything the Lord has said. That is the right thing to say to God. Have you met God? I guess many of us would say we have met God. We do know Jesus. We have been rescued. We deserve his punishment, but we've been rescued. We have a relationship with him. And the right thing to be saying to him, the thing that we want to say to him is, yes, be my God, be my Lord. My aim in life will be to do everything that you ask me to do. I'm not just going to offer to do bits and pieces of what you want me to do, just a few bits here and there. I really want to be doing everything that you ask me to do. That's our aim. That's what we're inspired to do when we are saved. Meeting God then inspires holiness. But meeting God also requires holiness, and that's what verses 9 to 25 are about. When we meet God at the end of our lives, it's not going to be enough just to have a desire to be holy. God is going to say, have you been made holy? It's not possible to be in God's presence without purity. And so there's no room for us to be complacent. We have to be fully trusting in what Jesus has done and seeking to obey him. We can't take it for granted. What did that look like for Israel as they met God on the mountain? Well, they needed mediation firstly. They needed mediation. Chapter 19, verse 9. The Lord said to Moses, I'm going to come to you in a dense cloud so that the people will hear me speaking from you and will always put their trust in you. Then Moses told the Lord what the people had said. You see, they couldn't just talk to God directly. They needed Moses to go ahead of them, to go up into this cloud that would hide God from their sight so that they wouldn't see him and be in danger from seeing God. They wouldn't speak to him directly. Someone would go in their place on their behalf and hear God and be a mediator, a go-between. That is what Moses did for them, and that is what Jesus offers to do for us. We need a mediator if we're going to meet God. Mediation. We need preparation. We need preparation. Verse 10 and 11, the Lord said to Moses, go to the people and consecrate them today and tomorrow. Make them wash their clothes and be ready by the third day, because on that day the Lord will come down on Mount Sinai in the sight of all the people. They're given 3 days to scrub clean and wash clean before they can face God. Now, the washing is only a symbol. It's only a picture. God doesn't really care if our clothes or our bodies are clean when we meet him. What he cares about is, are our lives clean? And our hearts, are our hearts clean? God is totally pure. He can't allow a single speck of disobedience in his presence. He can't tolerate even the slightest little bit of selfishness or greed or lust or any other kind of impurity that he sees in us. So we need preparation. We're not ready to meet God as we are. We need mediation and preparation. We need caution. We need caution. Look how careful they had to be. For example, verse 17. Then Moses led the people out of the camp to meet with God. They stood at the foot of the mountain. Mount Sinai was covered with smoke because the Lord descended on it in fire. The smoke billowed up from it like smoke from a furnace, and the whole mountain trembled violently as the sound of the trumpet grew louder and louder. Moses spoke, and the voice of God answered him. It is a terrifying experience, thunder and lightning, and summoned by the trumpet blast, the ancient equivalent of sort of police sirens or warning alarms blaring at you at a high volume. They see smoke, they see billowing up, they see a blazing furnace. Now, when God first met Moses, God appeared as a burning bush. But now the whole mountain is on fire. And the New Testament reminds Christians that this is still our God. Chapter 12, verse 29, our God is a consuming fire. Because of our sin, because of our disobedience, it is dangerous to be anywhere close to God, because he consumes sin. His anger burns it up. His holiness and his purity cannot tolerate and consumes the evil in us. So no wonder they are afraid and cautious. mediation, preparation, caution, and they also needed to go without complacency. It's like being in the presence of nuclear radiation or a chemical weapon. God is so deadly, so dangerous, that you have to have safety warnings and distance, and you dare not get too close because of our sin and his holiness. And we need to do that without complacency. Exodus 19, verse 21, the Lord said to him, "Go down and warn the people so they do not force their way through to see the Lord, and many of them perish." You see, they're trembling and they're scared and they're getting closer and closer towards God. And God suddenly says, "Wait, stop, don't let them get any closer." And Moses says, "But we've already warned them about this. We've already told them about this. You already told us to put a sort of police cordon, a barrier around the mountain." Even though God is up at the top of the mountain, covered by a cloud, they're not even to touch the bottom of the mountain or get close. And if they do, they'll be in danger of death. We've already warned them in the sternest possible way. And God says, "Well, warn them again. Warn them again. Have a special word with those in religious leadership, because they'll be the most complacent of all. Warn the priests as well. They're not safe either. Nobody can get close to God." You see, sometimes we think we are safe. We think we are ready to meet God. But really, we're just complacent and indifferent about it. You see, the presence of God is deadly, and to meet God is not easy. Back in verse 5, we saw that word, "if." God said, "If you obey me fully, if you keep my covenant, then you'll be my treasured possession and my kingdom." And now God is about to tell them what that involves. He gives them the Ten Commandments, telling them how to live a holy life, but he knows they're not going to manage it. He knows they're going to need to be forgiven day by day, just as we will not manage to obey God and need to be forgiven day by day. And so he gives them a way to be forgiven. And it's not easy. It's going to take 47 chapters, the rest of the book of Exodus, the whole of the book of Leviticus, most of the book of Numbers, all about priests and sacrifices, telling them how to have God in their lives and how to be forgiven. And the New Testament tells us that we can draw near to God now with confidence and with full assurance of faith. We saw that in Hebrews when we looked at it last year. Confidence and full assurance of faith, but not confidence in ourselves. Not faith in ourselves, confidence in the way that God has provided for us to be forgiven. Confidence in Jesus. Confidence that the only safe way to meet God is to put our trust in Jesus, that he has died for us so we can be forgiven. Hebrews says, draw near to God. Do it boldly. Do it with assurance. Meet God in person, says Hebrews. But also Hebrews warns us. Warns us never to let our lives drift or our hearts drift away from Jesus. Never to take Jesus for granted. Not to think that we can be half-hearted about it, that we can give up on repentance and just let our sin kind of settle in and become who we are. Because if we do that, and if we drift from Jesus, we have nothing left to protect us from God. And Hebrews says, our God, Christians, our God is a consuming fire. Well, I'm sure you will have noticed that tonight England will be meeting Italy, facing a big meeting for our nation. And I guess the nation wants to be ready for that. The whole nation getting their flags out and getting ready and working out where they're going to watch it and talking about it with each other. And for serious football fans, there's actually quite a lot of tension involved. And quite a lot of anxiety about it. There will be parts of the match that some people won't be able to bear to watch. And they'll have to kind of go out and make a cup of coffee for a few minutes because they can't face it, because it's too stressful. For Harry Kane, for Gareth Southgate, this is probably the biggest moment of their lives, certainly their careers so far. But all of that is nothing compared to meeting God. Meeting God is so much bigger. Can I ask, how seriously do you and I take it? How seriously do we take it that we're going to meet God at the end of our lives? How big a deal is it for us to be meeting God now? For us to be making sure that we're meeting with Jesus, that we're listening to him, that we're speaking to him in our own homes, and above all as we meet with his people and people who have his spirit in them. How much is that in our thoughts? How big a build-up is that? Watch the build-up for the match tonight. How big is the build-up in our lives to be ready? What's our biggest concern for our children, those of us who have children at home? How focused are we on that for them? What's our real concern for them? Are we concerned about their education and their health and their safety and their character and their behavior? Are these the things that come to mind when we worry about our children? Or are we thinking that they are going to meet God and they need to be ready and they need a mediator? I don't know about you, but I found this last year that spiritual apathy is a real danger for me. Much more difficult than I found it in the past. I don't know if you found that as well, to really stay focused on God, to really stay motivated on living for him. Well, it's really hard to stay focused and motivated on anything, isn't it, at the moment? Perhaps that's just me. All that time of being at home, of not being really able to do much, has it drained some of our energy and left us feeling a bit sluggish? Apathy. Well, perhaps the answer is to really dwell on who God is and what it means to meet him, to think about who we'll be meeting at the end of our lives, to think about who it is we can meet day by day as we speak to him in prayer. So let's draw near to God with confidence, with assurance, but never complacency.